Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I am Director Shepard.
And I am Director Stolke.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his officers presented to the public as a dramatic, hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you've all been cleared to know the truth. Josh, before we get started tonight, I apologize for this in advance, but in order to suss out Hydra agents, I have a few questions I'm going to need to ask you, okay?
You can ask me questions?
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, I've got all this stuff hooked up to my computer, you know, to check your pulse rate and your eye movement and microscopic filaments of your fibroid through arteries and stuff like that. And so I just got a couple quick questions. I trust you implicitly, but okay. We've got a lot of people here that don't know you. Right.
You know, I got nothing to hide. Go ahead.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me need to grab a stick pin real quick. Give me just a second.
Are you in pain? Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm ready.
Try to sit still.
I'm trying.
All right.
You know,
you have a choice. You have a choice between chicken and fish. So which one is it?
I'll have the lasagna.
Okay. All right. That's good. All right. Now, just to establish a baseline.
Okay.
I need the name of your childhood pet.
My childhood pet?
Yes.
Okay, Taffy.
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 Taffy. Okay, great. And I need the name of the street which you grew up on.
The street I grew up on would be Reed.
Reed. All right. So it turns out your porn name is actually Taffy Reed. So that's pretty cool. I thought that was interesting.
This is Taffy because it's stretchy. I don't...
All right. Well, you did pass. I totally believe it's
excellent.
You.
Excellent. All right. So I'm going to get a Band-Aid real quick. All right. So this was a tense episode.
Very tense. I thought the cross-cutting between the two storylines was gripping, and in that sense, I was gripping onto my chair, and I hadn't really realized it. It was the most energetic I have felt during an episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. so far to date. I mean, it was that sort of, all right, come on, we got to move along here. This is not cool. I'm really agitated and anxious
and
by it.
Not because of the action. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like that because of the action so much. It was like that because of the...
It was uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortable. You weren't sure what was going to happen. You weren't... You didn't know where it was going. And I like that. That's wonderful.
I didn't know how far, again, I didn't know how far they were going to take it with what Skye was going to find out in that episode. You know, like, mm-hmm. I thought they might, like, she just discovers, and then they, you know, and that's the end of the episode or something like that. But
kind of stretch it out and drag it along.
Yeah, exactly. But no, they're like, really kicking it in here and moving along with it. So. Why don't you give us your little rundown of this week's episode?
All right, a lot of good stuff to talk about. So let's refresh your memory of what this was. This was episode 19 in season 1, The Only Light in the Darkness. Okay, it aired on April 22nd, 2014. It was written by Monica Owusu-Breen, directed by Vincent Miziano.
Okay. Familiar names. Yep.
Familiar names. Yes. So are you afraid of the dark?
No, not really.
No. Well, if you are, you might need a musical nightlight. Mm. Maybe one that plays cello music. Okay? So, after discovering that all the inmates in the fridge were released by Garrett, you know, and all his Hydra minions, Coulson immediately tries to track down Marcus Daniels, also known as Blackout. Okay? So, he wants to leave Ward and Skye and May and our new buddy, Agent Koenig, and he wants to take Trip and the rest to stop Daniels before, you know, he does some harm to this mysterious cellist we don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
But now first, Koenig needs to use his Voight-Kampff machine, I mean his lie detector, to discover if any of these so-called agents are trying to infiltrate one of the last remaining S.H.I.E.L.D. safe spots. So they pass, of course. So once they leave, May just, she decides to take off. But while she's gone, Sky, she discovers the truth about Agent Grant Ward. But she can't do anything about it except for play along. And our other heroes, meanwhile, they wonder if there's any room for this mysterious musician in Coulson's life.
Well, so what do you think, Josh? Is there any room?
Well, you know what they say. You know, there's always room for cello.
Ba-dum-tsh. All right. Nice. I figured if you didn't get that in, I was going to get to it later.
So. I figured get out of the way early in the show. So
everyone's expecting it.
Of course.
You got to go for it. So, well, that was.
I'm glad she didn't play like the harpsichord or something.
There's always room for harpsichord. Yeah.
It's the flugelhorn player. We were in love for years.
Or bagpipes or something annoying like that. So, all right. Well, let's see. We've got a couple of little tidbits here in our news segment. The newest Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Art of Level 7 print will be out this Friday, the 25th. Now, it looks like the other ones are, well, the second and third ones still are available. I went and checked the site earlier today as we're recording the show. And the first print, the one that I didn't like too much, was sold out. But the Providence print and the print for Only Light in the Darkness is still available. But the new print is, yeah, and I really like that second print. But, they're only limited to 100, so I'm sure they're selling out relatively quickly. Stephanie Hans is the artist of the newest print. And I don't know if it's like it's not really a watercolor, but it's you can like see the brush strokes in it. It's a really interesting piece. I just put it up on our Facebook page, so people can either go to the Marvel Store. I think it's marvelstore.com/artoflevel7, or they can check out our Facebook page to see what it looks like. That should now be available as you are listening to the podcast. And then
it's another kind of interesting one with a different style.
Everyone so far has been a different style, which I really appreciate. You know, they're giving different artists with different stylistic takes, or the media that they use is different. Like
this one's very comic book covery.
It is.
It feels like to me.
It reminds me of I don't know if you know or are familiar with the artist Bill Sienkiewicz. He had worked on an Elektra series back in the 80s. He also worked on New Mutants. And he's got a really kind of sketchy, rough, frenetic kind of style. It's not real, it's not lifelike or, cartoony or anything like that. It's a lot of heavy brush strokes.
What's his name again?
Bill Sienkiewicz.
Okay.
And it looks like Sienkiewicz. Maybe it is Sienkiewicz. I don't know. I've been told a couple different ways to pronounce his name, but he's a really interesting artist, and she kind of has that flavor for it. Just that it's like a rough style. I go for more of the realistic photo style comic art or cartoony kind of comic art. That's just my personal take. But there are times when especially on certain character comic books where an art style like this kind of rough style is what you need to kind of convey the sense. And as a younger person I didn't like it as much, but I've grown to appreciate these kind of artists more as I've gotten older. So
very nice.
But one thing we talked about last week, we weren't sure if John Garrett, if people recall, if he was a character in the comic books. And after the episode aired, we did a little bit of research, and we found out that there is a Jonathan Garrett who was a former member of S.H.I.E.L.D., and he was made into a cyborg at one point to save his life, which, as you recall, we were discussing what that plate on Garrett's side might be. So there is
maybe heading in that direction.
Yeah, there's the possibility that, which would also explain why, you know, they're looking to find out how to heal people, and also to with all the stuff from the Deathlock program, right, to test that out. So he had appeared originally, I guess, in in Elektra Assassin number 2 from 1986. So that's the Bill Sienkiewicz series I was talking about.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I saw some of his work. It does look a lot like this one from this week, the S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah. So, and, you know, and then we found out, I don't want to say anything about them here, but we did find out the names of the last couple episodes for this season, and it looks like our team does not have much luck as they finish out the season here. We still haven't heard if there's going to be a season 2 at this point.
No, we haven't. That's very odd. But I'm not worried. I'm pretty confident.
At this point, yeah, I agree. I'm not worried either. The supposition, I do have a quick update to what I mentioned last week. I was talking about how if there was an Agent Carter series, that it would come during the break between season 1 and season 2. I was mistaken on that. What the actual article mentioned was that if there is an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 2, it would be split into two parts, kind of the way they're doing like Walking Dead right now. You know, they do like 11 or 12, well, probably 11 episodes, and then they take a sizable break in the middle and then do the remaining 11 episodes. So they would probably not have any breaks in between those. And in between those two halves of the season, they would sandwich a 13-episode Agent Carter series in the middle.
Which would be a pretty popular way of starting up new series now, you know.
That'd
people
be great.
That
well,
kind of
and
jonesing for the genre, throw it in the middle.
Especially if you've got something where S.H.I.E.L.D. is pretty much decimated and S.H.I.E.L.D. has to be rebuilt. And so they start looking back, you know, into the historic files about how did S.H.I.E.L.D. get together in the first place. And then, boom, you do an Agent Carter series that is basically about the formation of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a kind of historical document for the current show. And then you come back and you have S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, getting rebuilt and stuff.
You could
like
have,
that.
Like, you know, Coulson talking to Sky or something, and he could go, doo-doo-doo-doo.
No.
And it goes straight to no? Okay. All right. Well, hey, you know, they haven't called me for any ideas yet, so I was just throwing it out there for them.
Just throwing it out there. I understand. I understand. And you know, they can't pay you now if they take that idea, though.
You know what? They're not going to be making any money if they take that idea, so it's okay.
It's totally okay. All right, well, let's get into talking about The Only Light in the Darkness, which, again, is another title that it seems to have a lot of resonation with different aspects of this episode. The one that comes to mind immediately is, of course, the fact that Marcus Daniels, who we did see last week. Remember I mentioned there was a prisoner they busted out that Garrett said something to, and I said I felt like I should know who this guy was?
Yep.
Well, it was Marcus Daniels. I know that now.
But we hadn't seen him actually in the show, though, right?
We had not seen him to that point, but
gotcha.
It was
okay.
That moment of recognition last week, so that this week you could say, oh, that was the guy they let out of prison.
Right.
So just so we know that, you know, they have let people out, and there's an immediate reaction because this is the guy we saw last week.
And Garrett clearly knew who he was, so he was probably helped Coulson get him in the first place, I'm speculating.
Yeah, maybe that was when Garrett came down through the skylight or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, he never actually came down through the skylight. We know that was a lie. So.
It was just a side window.
Right, right. But anyway, so Marcus Daniels refers to Audrey, the cellist, as his light in the darkness. So there's a direct correlation there. And, you know, we saw in the show Audrey was wearing, you know, brighter colors, you know, more light colors, because she had that blue outfit on. And she was sitting in the one spotlight in the theater. Marcus Daniels was, you know, wearing the dark clothes everywhere he walked. The lights went out. Which is weird because I have that problem too. Sometimes I'll be walking by and street lights go out, or I'll be driving by and the street light goes out. So
that's creepy.
Maybe I had some what was it? Was it dark matter? Was that what it was they were working with? The dark force. Maybe there was a dark force experiment done on me.
You stepped in some is on your shoe?
I got a little bit of dark force.
You got a little dark force on your shoe. I'm not sure that's what that was. That has happened to you before, hasn't it, though? You'll just be walking or driving by a streetlight and it'll go out. Has that ever happened?
Oh, there are definitely certain streetlights that happens to me. It's, you know,
isn't that weird? To me, too.
I think we only notice it when we go by and it happens, and not the other 20 times that we go by and it doesn't happen.
Probably. I don't know. It just seems like there's so many streetlights that just seems like a weird. It's creepy when it happens because you never know.
Yeah, it definitely is. But it's not like they're all going out.
No, yeah, that's true. That'd be even more creepy.
But anyway, so Marcus is twisted, obviously. But, you know, he is consumed by this darkness, and she is this light, right? He is obviously touched emotionally by her cello playing, which is cool, but he takes it to, you know, that creepy stalker kind of level, as she mentions in the show.
Do you think there was more to that than just that? I mean, do you think maybe she had some sort of effect on this issue that he had, or you know, like it made him feel better when he was close to her? Or do you think it was just strictly the cello playing?
Now that you mention it, there could be, you know, something along the lines of, I mean, physically, like her physically affecting him in some way.
Yeah, that's what I was. It was just something I had thought of. I didn't see any indication of that. I mean, I guess that's what makes stalkers extra creepy, is that they, you know, are.
They see the connection and
strangely stalking you for bizarre reasons that you don't understand, but
right. I've saw that the music, maybe, you know, there's that old saying, you know, music soothes the savage breast.
Yeah.
So I felt that there was, you know, that it was playing on that element, you know, that it's just, you know, it made him feel. It lessened the weight of whatever, you
maybe.
Know.
Maybe. And you could see that when he got in the truck at the beginning. When he killed that guy and stole the truck, and he turned the radio on to the classical music. So,
which is, you know, and it's interesting the fact that, you know, they just had this classical music stuff going. I was, you know, it was very pretty. It was very nice. I should ask my niece plays cello, and I should ask her what if she knows what the piece was, because that was really cool.
A couple of my students play the cello. That's one of the bigger ones, but I doubt they'd be stalking any of my students after they played Hot Cross Buns on it. Probably not.
Well, yeah, my niece is playing stuff like in the, you know, like Boston Philharmonic now. So,
Wow!
And she's 15. So,
oh my gosh,
she's a prodigy. Okay. Yeah, that's so she may actually have a stalker. Who knows? But so the other the owner of my comic shop brought up an interesting point about Audrey and Marcus, though, other than the fact that it's the characters are Marcus Daniels and Audrey Nathan, I think it was, he saw a precedence for setting up two other Marvel comic book characters, Cloak and Dagger. Now, I know you're not as up on all your Marvel characters. Have you heard of these people before?
No.
So Cloak is he's a character that emits or transmits darkness, and he wears a cloak, surprise. But he partners with a woman who has light-based powers called Dagger, and they go as Cloak and Dagger. And they basically can feed off of each other. I think it's kind of a symbiotic relationship, so that, you know, because his darkness is overwhelming and stuff like that, so she can feed him with the light to, you know, make him so he's not as miserable and stuff like that. Huh. So he saw that there was a setup for this, and I said I thought that was pretty interesting because other than the fact that we don't see her exhibit any kind of light-based powers, that there was obviously, you know, there's a precedence for that in the Marvel Universe, and especially using the terms like light and darkness in the title, you know, it's a very what I want to say, you know, it makes it for an epic kind of story with all
that. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. And that's why I wondered if maybe there was some sort of connection like that. So Yeah. Although looking at pictures of Cloak and Dagger here, she did not wear that outfit when she played
the
cello.
Yeah, she's she's wearing a pretty slinky little outfit there in the comics. So, and then of course Marcus Daniels gets zapped at the end. So he's gone, right? Totally dead, probably.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah. Those kind of things. You never come back from those things.
Can't come back from that.
And somebody get like a shop vac and scoop them all up or something. He kind of disappeared into a mist kind of thing, right?
Well, not that he was, you know, working with Dark Force, which might have, like, the ability to, you know, connect little black holes between pocket dimensions or something like that, where he might accidentally just kind of whoop, drift away into.
So, kind of like a Thor kind of thing, where he maybe just is in a different dimension or a world or something like that.
Well, yeah, maybe like the guy that was stalking the woman in that repairs episode where Agent May, you know, they were going after the woman that had that weird ghost man coming after her, but it was a guy who was trapped, you know, from
right.
the explosion of the at the power plant or whatever. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to say that he's probably not gone forever, especially because we find out that S.H.I.E.L.D. was actually working to increase his powers, which...
Oh, that was a great line.
That was, you know, kind of creepy there in itself. I don't think that it was probably S.H.I.E.L.D. Proper. It was probably S.H.I.E.L.D. / Hydra. You know, the some people within S.H.I.E.L.D., but Hydra members were probably working on that. But...
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I'm sure
I think there's a real gray line between probably most of the agents involved in Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, I mean, even if they didn't know they were working for Hydra, they might have kind of. Yeah, we can talk about that at a different time. But I think that's one of the big problems they're going to have as they try to sort out who's with Hydra and who's with S.H.I.E.L.D. Some of them may have been doing bad stuff like this, while still loyal to S.H.I.E.L.D., not realizing what they were doing. So,
oh yeah, I mean, obviously there are always those people that are kind of corrupted by power, even if they're presumably loyal to the group that they're working with. So, yeah, I could see that. Also, some other ideas about being the only light in the darkness. So, Audrey was the only light in the darkness to Marcus. Well, Coulson is kind of the only light in the darkness to Audrey. Again, both kind of literally and figuratively. He's the one that basically, you know, it looked like Blackout had zapped all of the other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. So Coulson runs out from his protective room and grabs a... I just like how he grabs this light like it's a big gun. But it's a light. It's just a very dramatic scene with a light. Clark Gregg did a good job with it. And she can't really see who it is because the light's in her eyes. But, you know, Coulson, again, saves the day. And he doesn't go as far as, you know, telling her the truth. So he has kind of reverted back to the point where he was just being forthright and straightforward with everybody, and now that Agent Koenig told him that, you know, well, you gotta follow orders. You can't tell certain people certain things. And it seems like Coulson is just like, nope, you know, I'm not. She's healing. She's getting on with her life. I'm not going to interrupt. And that's great and all, but I think that she would probably appreciate it, you know?
Yeah, probably. Although I can see him kind of, hopefully, understanding a little bit maybe why some of these lies are necessary for people's safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this case, it's probably a good idea. I mean, she really did truly think he was dead. And what can he do? He can't really be with her right now. Not if he's gonna. You know, be loyal to S.H.I.E.L.D. and try to build it back up.
Right, and I understand that because I was thinking it's like he's going to, you know, what if he were to reveal himself and be like, hey, honey, here I am. Sorry, can't stick around. You know, got to go defeat these bad guys.
And I think he knows that. And that's why I think is one of the reasons he makes that decision.
It was responsible, but it's a little too bad because we've been hearing about this character since the Avengers. And, again, kind of one of those little offhanded, you know, throwaway lines. I'm sure they probably just said, hey, what kind of girlfriend would Coulson have? It's like, okay, she's a cellist in the Portland Symphony. And everybody got a nice chuckle out of that. But they continued to build it up. And so it's I thought it was great that they, you know, okay, good. You know, that's a little piece of backstory. That's a little more about Coulson that we got to find out in this episode. And I'm sure she will be back at some point. There will be either, you know, it's kind of like the Jane Foster thing. You know, somebody else will realize that she is connected to Coulson and maybe go after her or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Then I see Sky also being kind of, at least for the audience, the only light in the darkness, because right now she is the only one that knows the true intentions of Agent Grant
right.
Ward.
And the reason I thought that, you know, might kind of fit in with that light idea mm-hmm. was because right now Ward has got the upper hand. I mean, big time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If he truly is bad, which... You know, he keeps giving me more and more reasons why I think he is.
Yeah, he's bad dude.
But if they're going to be able to stop him, it's going to have to be Sky's help, because now she knows what he's up to by the end, and the rest of the team has no idea. So that's why I thought maybe she would kind of fit that light idea.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was thinking as well, is the fact that, you know, she is off with the team, and right now, and as far, first off, the rest of the team doesn't know where she and Ward are, and doesn't know where May is. So, I like the fact that the team has really splintered into these groups, because it leads for a lot of, it leads for a lot of tension. As they can cut back and forth, you know, as one team starts doing something and, you know, you realize, oh, no, don't do that because, you know, this other group has already discovered, you know, that that's wrong or whatever. And, you know, it allows for some interesting cross-cutting in the show. But also because, you know, Sky, from the audience standpoint, now we're the only, besides Sky, we're the only ones that know that she knows about Ward. And she has some kind of plan. So when I was watching the episode again, she's wandering around looking for Agent Koenig. Poor Patton Oswalt. I'm sorry. Couldn't make it more than an episode and a half. I would have liked to have seen, and I was talking to the guy in my comic shop, and I'm like, he's not really dead, right? I mean, he's just sleeping, right? So, and...
It's possible.
Yeah, I mean, he could just be, you know, he's dripping a little bit, but, you know, he could still be alive, I guess. I don't know. But no, I don't.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming back.
Yeah. But so then she kind of freaks out at that, and she goes into the bathroom, and that's when she has this breakdown. And I know I was joking several episodes ago where I was talking about Chloe Bennett's acting skills. I think it was the one where she was in the coma for the entire episode. But she did a great job. That scene where she's kind of freaking out because she's realized what Ward is, and you can just see her running through all these possibilities in her mind, really kind of freaked me out as well. But immediately after that, she starts searching around the bathroom. She's opening cupboards and the medicine cabinet behind the mirror. What is she searching for? Do you have any idea?
No.
Okay.
I mean, at first she was nervous and panicky. You know, I think she'd look for a way out, an escape, a weapon.
That's what I thought she was doing.
None of that's going to be in the medicine cabinet.
Yeah, well, I thought she was looking for, like, a secret, you know, passageway, and then she opens the medicine cabinet, and it's like, well, not there, honey.
Well, where else are you going to look? In the bathroom, I guess. I don't
know. Well, but
if
then,
she looked at the toilet.
What she does is she kind of looks over, and she sees this picture of this city at night. And I don't know if it was supposed to be Portland. I don't know, you know, what city. It's just one of their little windows, right, that displays the different images.
Uh-huh.
And it's like she has this moment of clarity And then the next time we see her, you know, Ward's looking around and he's poking his head into the closet and catches the penny, which is a great job of her being able to put the penny back so that he doesn't think anyone has disturbed the closet. But then she seems to have stuff under control. Like, she wants to go get her stuff because that's what Skye would do, but she's obviously cool with whatever's going on. She's got some kind of plan. Or she's, you know what? You know what I'm thinking right now? Maybe she did one of those things where she found something in the bathroom, you know, toothpaste or something like that, and she wrote a message to the team on the mirror.
Oh, I see. So we might find that out later.
Right. So it'll be like the beginning of the next episode. Because you're right. The last thing we saw with the other team, Coulson's team coming back, they're like, where is everybody? And they just don't know where anyone is. But as soon as they start looking around, they may not find Koenig right away. But I'm sure Skye was able to leave a message in some fashion. Because she didn't have the iPad with her. So maybe she was able to do something else with that. So I don't know. That's an interesting little mystery right there to see what she might have been doing. And I'm sure she's, you know, found some way to leave a message with to the team.
She was very very smart and clever in that segment there. Mm-hmm. First of all, realizing what happened very quickly, and then doing something about it, and then covering her tracks. So
Ward just getting control of her emotions. I mean, because she was really flustered.
Yeah,
and you know, if he had found her, but you know, she again had this kind of upper hand. She had this map. She knew exactly where he was, that he was coming, and so she knew she had to, you know, get herself under control. While we're talking about this sequence, I also want to talk about, you know, Ward's interview, as well as his discussion with Skye, his continued manipulation of Skye before she finds out about Koenig. So where she thinks that he is being just, you know, goofy Agent Ward. And the fact that every lie that Ward tells has a large heaping of the truth with it. If you noticed, everything he said was true from a certain point of view. Like when Koenig's interviewing him, it's like, you know, why are you here? And he's like, I'm an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And he's like, say that again. He's like, you know, I'm committed to S.H.I.E.L.D. And, you know, at that point, Koenig's about to blow him away, supposedly. I don't know how this lie detector works.
I was wondering, too. And, you know, since you mentioned it there, Koenig said at the beginning that because he was in pain, I don't know if he kind of implied that the movement would affect it.
Right.
But the fact that he was in pain, maybe he gave him a little leeway on that or something. I don't know. But obviously Ward was able to do enough that it did fool it.
Right. Well, I mean, there's the old myth about lie detectors and, you know, you put a tack in your shoe. And if you're feeling pain the entire time, it's always elevating your heart rate and everything like that. So they won't be able to detect a lie from the truth. I think
a tack probably would have been a little easier. I'm not sure why he didn't go that route.
than a big jagged piece of metal under his thumb.
Yeah.
His thumbnail or whatever it was.
I guess it was a really, really powerful.
Yeah. Jeez. Well, he's into pain. It's like, hey, you want to just beat me up and, you know, fracture my face and break a rib and, oh, he's a goofball. But then when he's talking to Skye, I mean, he is completely honest with her. Skye, I've done some things that I'm not proud of. I'm a bad guy. And she's like, oh, no, you're not. And he's like, I totally am. And she's like, no, I love you. So if you watch that scene again, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, that's the best kind of lie to tell is you tell the truth, or when you tell a lie, you make sure to include enough of the truth in it so that it's believable. And that's how he got out of the lie detector. You know, he said, no, okay, I am back for Skye. And it's like, okay, that is the truth. Garrett wanted him to come back for Skye. So, of course, that's the truth. But it's not all of the truth, but it's enough.
Well,
cool.
But we have talked about that many times about the bad guys are the ones that are really pretty forthright, pretty honest about what's going on. You know, other than not revealing their true intentions until they had to.
But monologuing again.
So I don't know. You're right. And even when he was on the lie detector, it seemed like his answers were all completely honest. Mm-hmm. It's just how he answered them. You know, he hesitated and almost felt like he had to think about it. So I don't know if that because and we don't really know the true story about, you know, his family, his brothers and things like that. But those seemed like very honest answers. So
yeah,
and probably what ended up fooling Koenig and causing him to believe everything he was saying.
Yeah, yeah. Now, going back to the only light in the darkness motif that we had here, I think you had you put down Coulson's team here?
Yeah.
So explain how you see that.
Well, as far as S.H.I.E.L.D. goes, right now, I'm not sure what else they have.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they're labeled
scattered.
As terrorists. The government is shutting them down. The military is coming and, you know, shutting down the any other bases or taking them over. But Coulson's team's working independently and supposedly, you know, for the good guys, which, you know, we know as the audience. But so to me, they felt like, you know, Coulson's team feels like the only light in the darkness for S.H.I.E.L.D. right now.
That is true. Yeah, they well, and it's, you know, it'd be kind of silly if it was somebody else, and you know, we're watching a TV show about Coulson's team. So
the other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
Yeah, it makes sense. But yeah, that's they are possibly the only ones that are going to be able to, you know, put it back together. We don't know how many other these secret bases that Fury has. Who knows? I guess we'll have to see how that works out. And then you also had May's mom listed here.
Mother Agent May's mom. Yeah, she. I mean, you know, she comes and picks up May, which was a cool scene. That for May, I think that was the only way out at that point. So she just I threw her in there just as a little light, because it didn't seem like May had anybody else she could call. At least she reacted like, you were my only option. I didn't want to call you.
The only one
you
could trust.
Yep, the only one she could trust. So, well, I think she still trusts Coulson. It's just, you know, he just cannot get past this.
And he was ready to by the end of the episode, of course. But by that point, it was too late. Thank you.
Yeah.
Too late. I told you it was too late.
Well, and see, like I said, he's realizing that sometimes those lies are really, truly necessary for protection. So he's, I think, like you said, he's starting to see it. But, I mean, finally, he needs to do a little Idina Menzel and don't make me say it.
Let it go.
Oh, jeez. Yes.
Let it snow.
But hopefully they'll – well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think they're going to really maybe make it back together with May and Coulson there by this season.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I would I would like to
see – I like how the team is splintered, like you said. Right now, that's a perfect way to end the season if that's where they're headed.
Yeah, I think having that sort of fractured team and – having the audience question motives and or, you know, who's going to make it back in time, especially, and if you splinter the team this way, you have the potential for three cliffhangers. You've got Coulson's team, you've got May, and you've got Ward and Sky, and that, you know, three storylines, three cliffhangers. But we still have, two more episodes? Yeah, two more episodes, I guess. No, three more episodes.
Three more
20,
episodes.
21 and 22, yeah. So, wow. Just, it's all picking up so fast now.
It's ramping up. Finally, it's great.
So one thing, well, okay, since we're talking about May, let me continue talking about May and then her mom. So at the end, this car pulls up and I'm thinking, okay, that's weird that, you know, she's like hitching a ride. But then the way she threw stuff in and got in the car, I was thinking, okay, she obviously knows who this person is. And then, you know, saw the lady sitting in the car, and I'm like, okay, that's probably May's mom. And we did get confirmation of that a little bit into the discussion. I had to go back because when they were doing the questions and answers and the lie detector, there were one of the questions was about who are the people in your family, and I thought we had heard from May, and I didn't remember her saying her mom. Now, when I went back and watched it again, the only people that answer the questions about family are Fitz, Agent Tripp, and Ward. So, and Skye, kind of, because she talks a little bit just about the fact that she has no family. But May only talks about the fact that she was, shocker, married once. I don't know that any of us suspected that. That seems interesting.
She was on a stakeout in Vegas, and, it was a one-night thing.
You know, it happens.
Yeah, no, that was a pretty big shocker. That caught me off guard.
And it wasn't one of those things where I was like, oh, my gosh, like a big thing. But it was just one of those, wow, that's, that doesn't seem, based on what we've seen of the character, she doesn't seem to make those connections with people. And, again, I think since the incident in Bahrain with whatever it was that happened to her there, it seems like she's been a different person, based on what Coulson said, I believe. She's been a different person since that incident. So, that she used to joke more and smile and everything like that, and now she's really more reserved and introspective. But since that's all we've ever seen from her, just the fact that, she may have actually had this relationship at one point is shocking. I guess, but not like shocking with a capital S, just like a lowercase s. So, we also
can
find
it be
out
italicized
that,
at least. Can we just
we'll italicize it. That's cool.
Okay, all
that's
right.
Cool. We also find out that May's mom is apparently retired from some government. Well, I won't even say government. From some agency, some spy agency that is not SHIELD. Thoughts?
I know. A couple. I mean, one really, and it was just kind of poking around. But I don't know enough about the Marvel universe to know anything about this. But I did see.
Well, so you're just going to regurgitate some words that you saw online.
Well, yeah, or I can just make it up if you.
Okay, no, that's fine. No, what is? What
she's
is
a member of the Justice League.
Oh, that's great. Oh, she's Wonder Woman.
I saw a couple of conversations that said she may work for AIM.
Okay.
Which would
AIM
odd. But
yeah, that would be kind of odd. I always see AIM as more of a research conglomerative that has an evil bent to it. Like it's kind of what they were in Iron Man 3.
And again, I don't know why she would. That was just a few people were talking about.
Sure.
That, but
okay.
So how about you? You have an idea?
I was thinking SWORD, which is a it's SWORD. It stands for something, and I don't have it up in front of me right now, so I'm not even going to try to do that. But it's another, SHIELD type of group, right? So you've got SHIELD, which is a more of a defensive protective agency, and SWORD, which is more of an aggressive tactical agency, right? Just the SHIELD and the SWORD.
Now, is there any and I'm just speculating based on, because she had kind of an accent there. Could she be like, and she said she wasn't with SHIELD, so could she be from another country?
It's,
like a SHIELD agency. Are there anything like that in the Marvel universe?
Like, I'm sorry, like a what?
Like a SHIELD agency in another country.
Oh, in another country?
Something like that? Yeah.
No, I mean, not that I'm aware of. I mean, I think SHIELD, has, obviously we know that SHIELD has like branches in other countries. Like when we saw Scorch in, that was China, I guess, or Hong Kong. There were Hong Kong SHIELD agents that were there. So, yeah, there's a possibility for that. I mean, and there's also the possibility, you know, she works with the CIA or the NSA or the FBI or something, you know, some just normal
sure.
group, which I would think that would be a little weird. She could work with what would be interesting to find out is that she works for the Air Force with General Talbot, who was hunting them. That would make for an interesting sequence because, you know, you've got this general who is hunting these agents, and then you've got one of his people who's, you know, feeding them information, which is kind of the same thing that got S.H.I.E.L.D. in trouble in the first place. You've got these, you know, people that are kind of being subversive within a group. So that might be interesting. But, yeah, I have no – I don't have any good idea. She doesn't stand out to me unless it's, you know, a recent group. There's nothing that really stands out to me as a – you know, oh, she could be so-and-so from the such-and-such, which we may find out she is. She's from the such-and-such agency.
That'd be a good name for an agency. Nobody would nobody'd guess it. You know? You'd say who you work for, and then people would just try to guess. You know?
And then I'm relatively certain about who they are discussing at the end of the episode that, you know, that May has asked for mm-hmm. information on. I'm like 99% certain that they're probably discussing Maria Hill.
Yeah, that made sense to me. So they don't tell you that, but then they show you, if you watch the scenes from next week.
Yeah, I mean, well, they've got the envelope, but they mention the name Maria.
Yes.
Because the mom says, are you going to off her or something along those lines? And May is like, no, I just want to talk to her. And she's like, oh, that's okay, or that's good, because I really like Maria. You know, how do you treat a girl like Maria? You know, there's a song in that, I think, somewhere.
You should write some. That's good.
But obviously other people are keeping tabs on other agencies are keeping tabs on former S.H.I.E.L.D. agents because, you know, we know that from Captain America that Maria is interviewing at Stark International. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, maybe there's going to be some other cameo we're going to get next week with Maria Hill coming back, which would be kind of cool.
Maybe. That'd maybe. Nice they've kind of played these cameos, you know, thin and infrequently, so I don't know about this season, but that might be coming.
Yeah, she may be the a big enough cameo that they didn't feel like they could get a Robert Downey Jr. or something like that in there as well. So, let's see what else. There was some other interesting stuff that was going on. I think some of it may relate more just kind of to the references from the episode. I don't know. Was there any other lights in the darkness or any other things you wanted to talk about just in terms of the characterizations of the team or any of the dynamics that we saw? Anything else that was going on in the episode there?
No, you had something here about Fitz, you know, talking about how he hated the change.
Right.
Fitz is... He's been kind of curious to me lately, you know. He goes kind of back and forth between brave and cowardly and happy. Was it last week that he said he was happy that Ward had taken out Garrett, or was that this week? That was this week.
That was this week. Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Well, because he Fitz said to Garrett two episodes ago that, you know, he wanted to be sure to be there to help take him down.
Yeah.
And that was also the episode that Fitz, he had never really even used a gun before, and then he shot somebody in that episode, in the episode before Providence, and I think it was Turn, 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 where they were attacking each other inside that one room, and Fitz was hiding under the table, and then he shot somebody. He's got a backbone that he's showing, but he's still that kind of nerdy...
Yeah, well, and I don't know. I kind of wish they would just keep inching him closer to having that backbone instead of they show it and then he gets kind of freaked out again. You know, he did really well with his little light drones that he had with against Daniels. That was pretty cool. And he had the gun, you know, that they were shooting at him. So and you know, talking up Simmons again and talking to Coulson. So I don't know. I kind of wish they would push him a little bit more towards being a little more stable and independent and only showing his really scary side if he's completely outmatched.
Well, it seemed like they were really going the route of, you know, there was a good heart-to-heart, as, you know, as weird as it was between Ward and Fitz. For Ward, basically, Ward has developed a bond with these characters, however much he wants to deny it. And for all of his posturing and wrangling and playing loose and easy with the truth here, I do think he cares for these characters. He tells Garrett that he does not. But
I think he tells himself he doesn't either.
That's true. But in this episode, he has that moment with Fitz in the hallway where Fitz is like, that triplet, he's horrible and he's terrible. And Ward's like, you know, he's not that bad. He's like, I agree with you. Yeah, he's terrible. We need to get him off the team or whatever. And Ward, you know, talks him through this whole process. It's like, you need to just tell Simmons how you feel, which is what Ward has ended up doing with Sky as well. I mean, he's taking his own advice, and I think he says he's doing it to infiltrate the team and get the secrets out. But I believe what's going to happen at some point, and, you know, I don't want to seem too trite about this because I think there is a lot of interesting stuff that happens between now and this point, but Ward will discover that he really does have a heart. You know, he does care about Sky. He does care about Coulson. He does care about other members of the team. And he will turn from being a bad guy back into being a good guy. So, you know, I think that seems like where they would be going with that storyline. Whedon always surprises me with his stuff, so, you know, that could be completely wrong, and he may die at the end of the season, too. Who knows? But I thought that was I thought it was a really, again, kind of an honest exchange between Fitz and Ward, and, in the hallway there. So we'll have to see what's going on with that. And then,
I like that he's made him more comfortable with Trip because now, you know, Trip can be part of the team because I like Trip.
Trip is great, and I think he works out great because he's kind of a one-for-one replacement for Ward, except that at this point we assume that he's a good guy. And he really seems to be hitting it off as part of the team. I forget what his line was exactly, but Coulson was like, I was hoping you would say exactly that. You know, that basically was like, you know, wherever you need me, whatever you need me to do, I'll be there. And Coulson's like, that's what I want to hear. So I thought that was cool. One other thing I wanted to say about Fitz was that at the end of the episode, he talks about how he hates change.
Mm-hmm.
But wasn't he in an earlier episode saying that that people should embrace the change? And I know when he was saying that, it seemed like he was kind of joking about it, I think. But I don't know. It's this episode, and maybe it's just my perception of this, but I felt Fitz was just a little off on this episode. And maybe it's because of the uncomfortableness around Simmons, and he's trying to address his own emotions, and he's not sure of himself and doesn't want to admit to her that he's interested. But I don't know. There was something going on there. Did you?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah. it was very obvious. He was jealous, and he doesn't want Simmons' attention.
But do you think it's more than that? I mean, do you think there's something else going on with Fitz? I'm just, you know, again, I've really taken Nick Fury to heart. I'm not trusting anybody, and
well,
it's totally messing with my watching habits on this show because I like to know where people stand, and then I can really enjoy those characters knowing that this is the bad guy and this is their goal. But right now, if I'm not knowing who anybody is,
the other thing that I had kind of observed, and I thought he had kind of gotten over this, but you know, he is really his emotions towards Garrett are really strong, and Trip was Garrett's Garrett was Trip's SO, right?
Yeah.
And so because they were so close, I think I didn't feel that so much in this episode, but maybe that's still where the emotions are coming from. But especially
that was in previous episodes, definitely.
Yeah, in previous episodes, he for sure, you know, he didn't trust Trip at all just because of that. Even though it's kind of he's, you know, I don't know, in my mind anyway, Trip has proven himself,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like the rest of the team too. But maybe that's it. Maybe that's what's wrong with Fitz.
Yeah, and that maybe I'm just seeing that element that Ian Kastecker's putting into the character, and I'm just kind of reading some subtext into it that I shouldn't, but who knows. I'm really interested to see where this is going to go. You know, at this point, it's all kind of up in the air. I really don't have much idea about what's going on. Like I said, I think Sky might have been able to plant a message for the team, but now she's off with Ward, and they're flying back to where? I'm guessing maybe the hub? Because she said it was location-encoded drive, and that's where she encrypted it, I think.
But she didn't tell him where, though, right?
No, she didn't mention that. He just, you know, they're in the plane. She's looking and commenting on how beautiful the sunset or the sunrise or whatever it is. And then, you know, he says, all right, well, you know what we need to do, so you're in charge. And it's great because she kind of is in charge because she, at this point, has the upper hand.
Yeah, kind of. Except if she could somehow take him somewhere other than where it's really encoded and get, you know, but the problem is that she didn't know what was going on. She didn't know where to direct the team, mm-hmm. when they left, you know, before they left, because I don't even think when she was in the bathroom at that point, he didn't even tell her that they were leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
And so I don't know that she'd be able to tell Coulson where they went off to.
Right. Unless she leaves something and has the badge, unless the badge has some, like, long-range tracking, right? Because we know the badge works within the facility,
uh-huh.
within Providence. But could that badge be tracked anywhere else?
That would work.
That's a good way to find her there, so... Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff, not to be too punny here, but up in the air with that part of the storyline. So I'm looking forward.
And it's gotta be. They don't drive anywhere, so.
Right. Even though it's a bus. Why do they call it a bus if it's a big plane? So, all right. You want to get into some of these references here? I have a lot of stuff because I put some information from the questions and answers section. I think there are a few references in there that are interesting to talk about. But
yeah. There were some pretty good references this time. Some of them were obvious. Some of them not so much.
Well, one of the ones that I enjoyed was Eric Koenig talking about the fact that Trip is a legacy S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. His grandfather was a member of the Howling Commandos. So at this point, we're assuming that it's an African-American member and the only one that we've seen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as well as in the comic books is Gabe Jones. So that is probably Tripp's grandfather. So there was one African-American member of the Howling Commandos. And it's not everybody that Captain America freed in the first Avenger, but it's like a small core group like Dum-Dum Dugan. And actually... Eric Koenig himself, that character's name was a Howling Commando. So I thought that was kind of cool that he was wishing he could be a Howling Commando. And in fact, that character's name was taken from a Howling Commando. So that was pretty neat. We talked about Blackout, right? So the fact that he was messing with this dark force and got his powers augmented by S.H.I.E.L.D.
Real quick, I want to point out that I like that they put that type of character in. I don't think they've done quite enough of that this first season here, mm-hmm. of just somebody with actual powers.
Oh, right.
You know, so now we've got a few people that we can mess around with.
Yeah, they all appear to be dead, though, right? I mean, they had Scorch, and he died, and then Blackout here, and he died.
There's the Gravitron guy.
Right.
And he's not dead.
No, he's not. That, you know, and they're getting to him, and there are tons of other... I mean, the great thing about having this fridge facility that they can release all the prisoners from is that, oh, great, we now have Villains of the Week for the next 5 seasons, right? Because we don't know how many people got released. It's just all of them, and they have to go collect them. But we know there's some women that were released as well, which will be cool because, you know, really we've only been seeing kind of male superpowered people. And I think it would be good to show some female superpowered people other than like the Asgardians, because we did have Sif and Lorelei.
Right.
You know, I want to see, you know, like a mutant or, you know, someone like that from Earth that, you know, got into an accident or something like that. Let's see. Okay, so some of the questions and answer pieces. I thought there were some funny references within these, mostly when it comes to the what's in the box question about you're on a deserted island and the box washes up.
Yes.
So Trip said what was in the box was a sat phone, which I think is hilarious because according to the director commentary on the Tom Hanks movie Castaway, have you seen that?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So there's that, all the stuff washes up on the beach, and there's the FedEx box that he never opens, and he returns to the lady at the end. According to Robert Zemeckis, there was a sat phone in that box. So if he had just opened it, he could have gotten off the island years earlier.
That's funny. I had never heard that before.
You never? Oh, yeah, that's, I thought it was hilarious, because, you know, It's the crux of the whole movie, the fact that he never opens this, and then he's stuck on the island for whatever it is, like 5 years or something like that. So, and then he comes back to Starling City. No, wait, I'm getting my Castaway Island stories confused here. and then Simmons mentions that she opens up the box and the TARDIS is inside, which is a Doctor Who reference, which I thought was pretty cool. Of course, because, you know, she's British, and so all British people talk about that.
I've noticed that, too.
Really? All your British friends talk about Doctor Who?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And then, let's see. I couldn't find any reference to this, but I thought it was pretty funny having Skye's... we find out that Skye is her first name, not her last name, and she really has no last name because she has no family. Except that the people at the orphanage called her Mary Sue Poots, which...
That's a mean orphanage.
I apologize if anyone out there has the last name of Poots, but I think that's kind of a funny-sounding last name.
That's what they came up with there.
Does she look like a Mary Sue to you?
No.
I don't know. I mean, I could see her in pigtails and stuff like that.
I suppose. That was a funny name.
and then we had Project Insight and Alexander Pierce from Captain America, the Winter Soldier, name checked. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Agent May had actually met Alexander Pierce and shook his hand once. And then Tripp mentioned that Garrett would get calls once in a while and said that they had mutual friends, which that makes complete sense, being that Garrett is the clairvoyant and he's with Hydra. And, of course, Alexander Pierce is, you know, was kind of the head Hydra guy at the time within S.H.I.E.L.D. So that was kind of cool. We mentioned the cellist name checked from Avengers. Who calls Koenig Steve Rogers? Is that
Skye?
Is that Skye? Okay.
Yeah. He needs to, you know, what she said, Steve Rogers, and I can't remember the reference. She was making fun of him, though, you know.
She was basically telling him to get off his butt. And and, yeah. you know, live on the edge, you know, to, because they were, I think that was when they were trying to, she was mentioning that she was going to hack into the NSA to get into their satellites, and Ward's like, how long is that going to take? And she's like, well, that's pretty tough. I got to hack into them. About an hour. It's like, okay, she's pretty cocky there. And then...
she did, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And what was great was that I knew, you know, okay, time is at an essence here, because as soon as she is able to connect to the NSA and they can see the video footage, Ward has to act at that point. Otherwise, he's going to be, you know, outed. So that was very, again, that was very tense for those sequences there. They name checked Bruce Banner because he was the one that kind of came up with the idea behind whatever, weaponizing the light with whatever that was that fits attached to it, that kind of turned it into basically gamma radiation, so that Darkstar, what's his name, Blackout, would vaporize himself. And then you found a piece here, because Melinda May gives her full name. It's Melinda Zhaolin May. And I actually saw this on the internet too, but you had found a reference here as to what somebody else thought about the middle name and what it might be a reference to.
I guess in an Iron Man comic, it said that there was an AIM representative named Huang Zhaolin, and that's, you know, it's the same name. So, and it also, you know, had centipede connections to what's the guy's name? Aldrich Killian.
Killian, yeah, from Iron Man 3.
Oh, right.
With that extremist,
the extremist projects, yeah. So, anyway, that was, you know, it could just be a coincidence, but it did have the same name.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's, you know, I appreciate it where if they're going to give a character a name, that they look through characters that are already existing and pull elements from that that are, you know, that can relate thematically like this. It's one of those things where it's like, it's probably not the same person or related to the same person, but, you know, it's kind of one of those circles. It's like, oh, well, this person was from an Iron Man, and that kind of, and it was from a storyline that was about stuff with extremists, and it relates kind of back to the centipede, you know, so it all kind of ties together rather than just making up a name that doesn't mean anything, like
right.
Mary Sue Poots. So
that doesn't mean anything? Dang it.
I don't know. You know, I'm sure there's going to be some villain's going to break out. He's like, I need to find Mary Sue Poots. And of course, you
maybe if
will.
You know, rearrange the letters, it says I am Voldemort or something, you know, that's,
oh, wow. I did not, I didn't even think about that. Maybe
I'll work on that.
Yeah. I was going to run, I'll run it through my little anagram generator or something like that. So, but, I got to say, there was a time, and I probably had mentioned this a couple weeks ago as things were starting to heat up as well, but there was a time probably around episode 12 or so that I was like, you know, if they don't get renewed for a second season, I'll be okay with it. But now I can't wait till the next episode, and I can't see us not moving into a second season at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's much more fun now to watch and talk about and speculate and wonder what's going to happen. And so.
Well, I think that's the big thing, is that there is enough stuff to kind of speculate about. We can continue with that, so that's really cool. So, but that seems to be all that we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
So if you enjoyed us and enjoyed this episode, please make sure you leave us some feedback on iTunes. And you can also contact us. Let us know. Send us an email at shield@randomchatter.com, or you can get on Twitter. Find us at Agents Podcast, or get on the Facebook page at facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And you can also check out another show that Josh and I do called Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, which follows the TV series Arrow. And it's also available right here from randomchatter.com. And if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And we are so close to actually getting 100 likes by the end of season one. I think we're going to do this. I think we can reclaim our page. I feel like it's going to happen within this week.
That's right. That's right. And unless you discover I was, you know, lying on that lie detector the whole time.
Oh, okay. Well,
getting my secret agents to like our page for me.
I may have to revoke your access to our Facebook page then. So,
God, just kidding.
Well, so for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. case files, for myself and for Taffy Reed, this is Jay.
And this is Taffy.
Signing off from Level 7.
This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.